Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. America's Generation Y is becoming Generation Why Should I Vote? This November is projected to see a record low turnout of voters under 30. Since 9/11, rates of volunteerism have reportedly soared in the college and post-college crowd, but rates of voting continue to drop. Generation Y might reply, why should we care? Political campaigns riveted to Social Security, Medicare, and prescription drugs for the elderly have made many 20-somethings ask, why don't I fit in? The real issues are big enough, though. If America goes to war with Iraq, it will be overwhelmingly the young who do the fighting and dying. But America's seniors now outvote 18 to 30-year-olds 2-1. We're talking this hour about America's youngest adults and why they're not voting. We'll look at the political profile of the country's potential young voters and ask, what would it take to get them, to get you, to the polls? Have young people changed or have politics changed? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me tonight in the studio are two Gen Yers, if I may use that term, and a baby boomer. We're age-oriented tonight. Ryan Friedrichs is a Michigan native and graduate of public policy graduate student of public policy at Harvard's John F. Kennedy School of Government and former executive director of the Youth Vote Coalition. Good evening and welcome, Ryan Friedrichs.
Thanks for having me.
Malia Lazu is of Boston is executive director of Mass Vote, and we'll hear what that is. But welcome and good evening, Malia.
Thank you very much.
And Tom Patterson is Bradley Professor for Government and the Press at Harvard's Kennedy School and author of The Vanishing Voter, Public Involvement in an Age of Uncertainty. Good evening and welcome, Tom Patterson.
Thank you, Tom.
It's great to have you. Also with us tonight from Brooklyn, New York, is tonight's On Point News analyst, Amity Schles, senior columnist for the Financial Times. Hello, Amity.
Hello, Tom.
Good to have you with us from Brooklyn, Amity. All right, Ryan and Malia, I want to turn to you first. Malia, let me ask you, we'll dig into all of this, but top line, why are we seeing record low voter turnouts among young Americans? What's your interpretation?
I think there's a couple of reasons why we're seeing record low numbers, and we are seeing record low numbers in all generations. But in mine in particular, I think that first we're dealing with, as you said in your opening, Tom, where our issues are not being addressed. When we talk about education, we talk about K through 12. I'm wondering how I'm going to pay back my student loans.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about affordable housing, we don't talk about first-time home buyers, and which is where I am in my life. And I think that really matters. I mean, why do you purchase a product? Why are you going to take time out on a Tuesday to pull that lever? It's because you think that it's going to do something for you. And I don't think that my generation is making the connection with their way of life and their quality of life and voting. And I also want to add, we also have certain barriers like registration deadlines and, voter registration that really makes it hard for young people who, I know I move every year. I'm on that Boston once a year move plan.
A mobile age group.
Exactly, exactly. And, needing to register to vote 20 days before the election when a majority of people don't start caring about the election till about 2 weeks before does create a barrier.
If the spirit moves you closer to voting day, it's just not going to be possible. Ryan Friedrichs, how about it? Is it just that American politicians are not speaking to younger voters? Are there issues not being picked up? Or are younger voters not being spoken to because they're not speaking at the voting booth?
It's both. Essentially, you have a cycle of mutual neglect that we've seen develop over the last maybe 30 years where young people don't turn out at the polls. Because they don't turn out, they're not targeted. They're not talked to. As Malia said, their issues are not on the front burner, and so they turn out less, so they're targeted less. You've seen campaigns become more professional over the last 20 or so years, and they're better at targeting who they want to vote and better at ignoring who they don't really care about turnout levels for. And so that has magnified this sort of chicken and egg cycle where they don't turn out, so they're not targeted. And it's a tough one to break, but what we've seen is that it is possible to break it. You've seen candidates like Ventura, like McCain.
Jesse Ventura, John McCain.
Absolutely. Who have found strategies that do break this cycle of mutual neglect that is pretty vicious and has drove us to sort of unbelievably low turnout in this age group. So and the Youth Vote Coalition worked on a lot of those strategies, trying to identify models that campaigns and candidates can use to get to these young voters.
Mm-hmm. Malia Lazu, you're 25. You've got a marvelously young tongue stud.
And a tattoo, Tom.
Yeah, you've got all the accoutrements here. When you go out and talk to young people, I guess in Boston is where you're working, with Mass Vote.
Yeah, but we work in Brockton and Lowell and Springfield.
Okay, so several Massachusetts communities. Mm-hmm. What do you hear from 20-somethings? Is there a magic phrase you can whisper in their ear that gets them to say, oh, maybe I will vote after all?
Yes. I mean, I don't think there's a magic phrase, but there is a way to engage them. And the first is to validate why they feel discouraged. You know, I mean, I think so often we're just blamed, oh, well, you're apathetic. I started Mass Vote when I was, you know, a senior in college and had been working on this issue since I was a sophomore, as well as partying and going to school full time. I was not lazy. You know, it was that I just didn't see that this process, that there was a place for me in this process. Mm-hmm. The first thing is, as you said, Tom, my look helps. I'm not an older white male in a suit talking to people saying, hey, you know, this is what's good for you. Let me tell you something about yourself. Mm-hmm. I'm able to say, let's talk about us and where we are. And I think that that's very important, who the messenger is. But second is how the message is getting across. Youth Vote, MTV, and has done a lot with marketing this. And I think that it's very important that we
do. Has it worked? The rock the vote stuff?
I think it's worked to a certain extent. I think it's worked to create a culture of voting. And also it's worked to show politics can be put to what you care about. You know, mm-hmm. we can talk about parental advisory. We can talk about, you know, whose music is judged and whose isn't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we work with hip-hop radio stations and with hip-hop promoters like Movement Promotions, which just did a huge Beatnuts concert. And, you know, having a group like the Beatnuts, who normally just talk about, you know, shaking it,
right,
say, I'm just not here to entertain you. I'm here for a reason. I want you to register to vote, makes it sound important, you know? And I think that that's really, if there's one thing that I have learned from this, is you can't use the same old politic. What gets my grandmother to vote is not going to get me to vote. And I think that that's an investment that campaigns have to be willing to make.
Mm. Ryan Friedrichs?
Yeah, I'd say in terms of evaluating the strategies, over the 90s, Rock the Vote did have, you know, Madonna on the horse and a flag saying vote, these sort of very right. memorable images, but it didn't connect on the ground. It sort of, for lack of a better term, had an air campaign and no ground campaign.
Yeah.
And I think what the Youth Vote Coalition was in 2000 was a conglomerate of grassroots organizations, organizers like Malia, adding that piece, that follow-up when Rock the Vote is off the television, somebody knocking at your door. Mm-hmm. Malia coming to your door and saying, look, here's why it connects to you. Mm-hmm. And young people aren't sort of a monolith. I don't think there's a silver bullet issue that somebody being from Michigan in downtown Detroit, you know, connects absolutely with that somebody in the Upper Peninsula, rural Michigan, mm-hmm. would both feel. They're different. Young people are as diverse as any group in the population. Mm-hmm. So I think that local connection, that local follow through, that community base is the way to get to them.
It really makes a difference. Tom Patterson, jump in here with us. We haven't talked about the basic numbers, and if you could lay some of those out for us, I'd appreciate it. I mean, young Americans have never voted in the same numbers as middle-aged Americans, and certainly not as American seniors do today, but what does it look like? What's the trend line?
Well, you're right about the general pattern. As you go through the ages, you know, voting does increase as people get older, and pretty well up through the 60s, and then it begins to tail off a little bit. But what's unusual about the last 30 years is that each succeeding new group of voters has come in somewhat lower.
I mean, as a new age cohort enters voting age, they're just not being as participatory as the young people before them.
Right. So the initial voting rate's a little bit lower mm-hmm. with each new voting group, mm-hmm. And then they don't catch up. So that even as you look at the over time trajectory, they don't quite move to the same level as they reach the 30s and the 40s.
Which would make this an important part of the explanation of why American voting overall is diminishing, voting rates.
Well, on one end of the electorate, we've been losing this very high participatory group, the generations of the Depression and World War II, mm-hmm. who were mm-hmm. called into public life and sort of learned the value of public life. And they carried that when they came, you know, out of the Second World War. They carried that into their communities. They were very participatory in voluntary activities, very high voters, and they maintained that. And we're losing those generations, and the X and Y generations, at least in terms of voting, you know, simply have come in much lower.
Now we read that among 25-year-olds, voting in the November ballot, just coming up on the horizon now, is expected to be around 23% of eligible voters. That senior voting is running 2-to-1 heavier than that. We had a little fun at the expense of senior voters early in the hour, but the fact is, as you say, they've been very strong participants in American voting, in the democratic system, and they've pushed that right up into a higher age than ever before. Has that perversely become a kind of roadblock to youth voting? I'll put this to you, Ryan. You know, we see the ads on television, and they're focused on Social Security, right. Medicare. We hear about President Bush now acting on prescription drugs for seniors. Politicians focus on that like a laser beam. Does that turn off a younger generation because an older generation is really exercising that vote in the way that you'd like to see it done?
I think in terms of television specifically, there was a great study in 2000 called Neglection 2000 that looked at where candidates buy ads. And you're exactly right. They'd buy them on, you know, a Wheel of Fortune as opposed to a, you know, a young MTV, for mm-hmm. example. They target that older generation. And I don't think it's necessarily young people being turned off by those issues. I think they can understand, as that Washington Post article this week said, they do care about medicine costs for seniors. Mm-hmm. It is important, mm-hmm. but it's not what, like Melissa said, it's not what gets their heart beating fast. It's not what's going to pull them into the process, make them a voter, make them somebody who works on campaigns and gets into politics. So it's not that those issues are turning them off. It's that they're feeling ignored. They're feeling like spectators, like they're watching somebody else's election. They're sitting in the bleachers watching. Yeah. They're not actually a participant.
Malia, that looks like a kind of logjam or you know, a negative cycle here because, as you say, the politicians focus on where the votes are. The votes are in the older generation, so that's what the ads are about, that's what the speeches are about, that's why the nursing home visits and retirement community visits, that's just a reality. And the politician's first responsibility is to get elected. So
exactly.
If that's where the votes are, how do you get the message turned to the younger voters' interests?
Exactly. I think that you're absolutely right, Tom. When you run to win. Very few people run to make a point, and therefore you're going to go where the votes are. And I think candidates have to be willing to make the investment, but it also takes outside people like Youth Vote, like Mass Vote, and Boston Vote to bring the issue of voting to young people. I also want to say one interesting thing that Professor Patterson touched on about the World War II generation. Mm-hmm. And my grandfather is a part of that generation, mm-hmm. my grandparents, who I'm very close to, and we're actually generational voters, mm-hmm. Which I think has a lot to do with it as well, is, you know, if you see your parents vote, then you know it's something to do.
Right, it's imprinted.
Exactly. But one of the things that I know is very different between my view of government and my grandfather's view of government was the 70s. And I think that being raised post-Watergate, mm-hmm. post-Vietnam, post-things, you know, looking at money in politics, which mm-hmm. is huge, huge, mm-hmm. looking at the lack of candidates because of the scandals. I mean, I think that, right, you know, in the World War II generation, these things weren't being rammed down your throat on 24-hour news channels. And, mm-hmm. you know, my generation is this kind of post-Watergate Vietnam where we're being cynical.
Amity Slays, jump in here with us. What do you see in these low numbers of young American voters?
Well, I think we should look at the side of the interests of the young voters. And clearly, we've sketched it a little. Their interests are not represented, but the burden is also on them to act. They're the ones who are carrying the tax burden. The Social Security tax, the payroll tax, is the greatest tax for 70% of American households. That includes young people, the first dollar they earn at McDonald's mm-hmm. or wherever.
And will be for a long time as boomers retire.
Right, and they are paying for those old people. They are paying for that extended prescription drugs. Will that money be there? Probably not. There was that wonderful Gen X survey a few years ago that showed that more Gen X people believed they would meet an extraterrestrial than get their Social Security money when the time came. And you know what? That's not totally an unreasonable thought. But the onus is on the generation to recognize it's being had if it does not represent itself. Sad but true. Not just outreach. They have to want to, too.
Stand up and grab that ring. We're talking tonight about America's missing young voters, under 30s, who are no-shows at the polls. You can join us. Why are young Americans not voting? Is it simple apathy, or is it something else? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about America's missing young voters. And here are the questions for you. Have young people changed, or have politics changed? And what does it mean for America if its young citizens don't vote? Are young non-voters shirking a responsibility, or are they acknowledging somehow a new reality of some kind? We are at 1-800-423-8255. I'm joined in the studio tonight by a terrific group. Malia Lazou is Executive Director of Mass Vote. It's a group that gets the vote out in Massachusetts. Ryan Friedrichs is with a national group, or was, former Executive Director of the Youth Vote Coalition. He's a graduate student in public policy at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. And Tom Patterson is Bradley Professor of Government and the Press at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government and author of The Vanishing Voter. You can join us as well, and a mountain of people want to. I want to turn to them right now. Josh is on the line. Hi, Josh. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you?
Real well.
I just want to make a comment and about something that one of your previous guests had mentioned, kind of the apathy versus is apathy the reason people aren't voting? Mm-hmm. And for myself, I'm 29.
Do you vote, Josh?
I've never voted.
Never. Why?
Can't figure out how to do it. I get a voter registration card 6 months before an election. You know, usually I've moved at that point. I don't know, you know, I'm never going to find that card when it comes time to vote. And so I don't have time. I'm just getting home from work now. I left at 7.
Right.
I don't have time to, you know, put 45 minutes or an hour into figuring out where do I go to vote. Do I need to bring a card? Do I need to find that card?
Well, it's not exactly silly, but it is incredible. I mean, when you hear yourself say that, is this like the VCR that we can never get to record a show and so we never use it? Or, you know, is this something that you could do, Josh, and you just don't have the gumption to get it done? Or is it really that difficult?
I don't know if it's that difficult, but I just don't even know where I would go to figure out what address do I go to. But it's not apathy. I have opinions,
right.
and I follow politics pretty closely. I would actually be interested in, you know, kind of casting my vote. But I know it sounds shocking and ridiculous, but
well, honestly, I'm sure you are not the only one. Ryan Friedrichs, what do you hear in Josh's observation?
What he's saying reflects a fact that we've seen manifested in the election day registration laws. There's 6 states that have taken down all barriers to voter registration.
What does that mean?
Same day, you can register to vote on election day.
Step right up.
Absolutely. Show up. You have a license. You can vote. Just take down that barrier.
Which states are those?
That's Wisconsin. I think it's Minnesota, Maine. Mm-hmm. Some of the ones out west. Yeah, New Hampshire.
Well, that must really help.
Consistently.
Are the voting rates different in those states?
Absolutely. They consistently lead in young voter turnout and consistently lead in overall voter turnout. But you know, rising tide lifts all boats. But disproportionately lifts young voters more. So what he's saying, it reflects a fact, which Malia mentioned earlier. It's absolutely right. Taking down these barriers does make a big difference.
Josh, if you could walk right in, 10 days from now, and cast a vote and register on the spot, would you do it?
Absolutely. If someone would just send me the address and tell me when to be there and where, I'd absolutely do it.
Malia Lazou, is there any reason, Josh, thanks for your call, is there any reason we shouldn't make it that easy?
No, and I think that's one of the things that we don't really talk about when we talk about why people don't vote. This country wasn't founded on full participation. It was founded on a small group of people making decisions, and it's slowly through fights, not through, you know, ease, not someone just didn't make a suggestion, hey, I'm a woman, I want to vote. Okay, you have the right to. I mean, through fighting, the vote was won for people, and the vote wasn't won for 18-year-olds till a few decades ago.
So let me ask, you're a young woman, you're a young woman of color. Are you saying that there's a kind of conspiracy to keep young voters out of the
voting
place?
No, not at all. But I think what Josh brings up comes from a lack of tradition. I'm from Hawaii, and I used to go to vote with my mother, and we would vote paper ballots. And when I came here and when I went to vote in Boston in these huge lever machines, I was petrified. It was like looking at the inside of a car. And I had no idea what to do. And I was looking at this poll worker who the last thing she wanted to do was help me. And, you know, and I hoped I vote for the right person, and I walked out. I think that education with voting and what Josh's point is so right on, because as Ryan had said, you know, it's something that we need to break, barriers we need to break down, but also basic education that people don't want to ask, because as you said, Tom, you know, this is democracy. We're all doing it. I mean, if we looked at turnout as a poll, we would have 100% voter turnout, because everyone votes when you ask them.
And yet it must be that getting over the hump of that, casting that first vote, getting registered for the first time must be a big deal. It must catch a lot of people up, Ryan.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. What Malia is talking about, essentially, people feeling discouraged from voting because the barriers haven't been dropped for them is a part of it. But I think what the other caller mentioned in terms of the responsibility and the onus on the young people, it's real. And I think that's why the word mutual is in cycle of mutual neglect, that there is a onus or a gains that can be had by young people actually engaging the political process and a changing of the issue. So I think that's something I don't want to forget here, that there is two parties here, the campaigns ignoring them and the young people ignoring the campaigns. The study was called They Pretend to Talk to Us and We Pretend to Vote was the 2000 study that showed a lot of this.
And neither happens. Irene's calling from Winthrop, Massachusetts. Hi, Irene. You're on the air.
Hi. Actually, most of your panelists have touched on the things I thought of when you first announced that this was going to be the topic about mobility.
Young people move, and so it's harder to keep up with the voting registration.
Yes, and they don't know the local politics that well. They may know the national, but they don't know who their local representative is, for example.
Sure.
But I think it's important to point out, one of the young ladies had talked about the effect of Vietnam and the 70s, and that was actually my generation. I'm the generation in the middle.
Okay.
I'm not the senior citizen who's going out at 80%, although I've never failed to vote in an election in my entire life.
So this generation is almost, could be the generation of your children.
They are.
So have we taught our children well here, Irene?
No, I have, and I'm really grateful that they listened. My youngest turned 18 a couple of years ago, and she had just gone away to college, and she said, I'll be home Tuesday because I have to register to vote. And I said, I can get you an absentee ballot. You don't have to come home. She said, I have been looking forward to going to the town clerk's office and registering to vote ever since I was about 10.
Wants to walk in those shoes.
And my older daughter was stuffing leaflets and handing out stuff for Evelyn Murphy when she was 11. But, I mean, I was raised like that, and that's the way I've raised my kids. And I think that a big chunk of what's going on here is that the person who took my call mentioned this is the boomer generation. I'm actually just before that.
But
hasn't done enough to bring their kids up to believe that it's an you can figure out how to go get your driver's license at 16. You find the registry of motor vehicles real fast.
Yes, yes, you do.
And I think a lot of, and sadly, a lot of my friends and cohorts in my age group, I think, got kind of cynical about government.
And just haven't encouraged it enough.
And haven't encouraged their own children to get involved in local stuff and then to go down, know where to go to vote.
Irene, we've got it. And it's a great point, and thank you for sharing it. Tom Patterson, help us sort this out. You've looked at the reasons that people don't vote. How much do you lay at the feet of the difficulty of just getting through the paperwork? How much do you lay at the feet of the parents' generation of this young voting tier? How do you trace the roots of cause here?
Well, you know, some of these barriers are real barriers. I mean, registration, unlike Europe where they have automatic registration, and, you know, here's the individual's responsibility. And it seems pretty easy if you've been through the process, but if you've never been through the process, it's not all that easy. And we asked young people during the 2000 campaign if they knew when the registration deadline was in their state, and 90%, of course, had no idea. And if people are out there today and in most states of the union thinking they can vote in November and they're not yet registered, they're actually out of luck. The registration deadline has come and gone. So, you know, these are real barriers. But I think one of the things we haven't talked about is the childhood and adolescent experiences of the X and Y generations. There was nothing like Vietnam out there. There certainly was nothing like World War II or the Depression to pull people
into
the
galvanizing historic experience.
Right. And also there was not even the 6:30 evening news on the television every night.
Well, it was there.
Well, it was cable.
So you didn't have to watch it.
So they didn't, and, you know, an 8-year-old doesn't have any interest in the news, but if over a period of 10 years you kind of get a little bit of it every night because your parents are watching it, you may develop some interest in the news and then develop an interest in public affairs. And we not only have a participation problem with the youth, we have an information problem. They're not very much interested in the news, and these things do go together.
Mm. Amity Schlaes in New York, speak to this issue of the larger context of these dropping voting numbers.
Well, let's turn it around now, because I think in a way we all sound like we're either teaching, helping, scolding, explaining. What if we said it's not such a terrible thing that young people don't vote? Why? Because it used to be there was this great and important faith in the collective military. We had to fight the Cold War, the collective organization, the organization men. We had to work at IBM or General Motors. And then we learned, actually, that government wasn't quite as important as we thought it was, and actually economic growth came from the private sector. And government was actually this distant thing that was often more problematic than helpful.
Amity, are you saying that we've got a generation that is kind of natural libertarians?
Libertarians. The point is, it's not all horrible that people feel they can live without government. I think people should vote, but it's not all horrible that we're in a society where people feel that government is not that important. And in a correlating way, you see, who do we elect for politicians? We elect business people. We elect people from what we think is, or actors. Fred Thompson, Jesse Ventura, performer. In here in New York, Mayor Bloomberg, because we think that's a more successful model than the political model.
Let him be the mayor,
even if he doesn't know anything about politics. And I think it's interesting, and it's not 100% bad.
But how does it jive with us wanting to have a thriving democracy? I mean, can things just be such a land of lotus eaters that we can go off and not vote?
There are reasons we have to vote. As I say, for the young generation or people who were born after 1965, 1970, number one priority, aside from whatever war, is Social Security. They are being had. They have to fix that. Only they can fix that. Mm-hmm. There are things that have to change to make it fair, and they need to vote on that. But it's also interesting that they are not necessarily counting on that government help. At the other end, you have a bunch of greedy grandmas and granddads who are turning the Depression to their advantage. Oh, I suffered so many years ago. And they did. We all acknowledge it. So I get all my drugs paid for. And guess who's going to pay for that? You younger people.
Ryan Trudeau, let me put Amity Schlaes' point to you. Are we seeing here the kind of Reagan-era babies growing up, having heard that in the air, that kind of less reliance on government, and saying, is it about a kind of libertarian streak in this generation that says, well, government doesn't matter that much anyway, so why vote?
Not at all. And I think what you should look at is issues, and issues. Young people, 18 to 24 years old, are the most uninsured group in this entire population in terms of health care. Tuition rose 10% this year just in the New York Times
roof,
today.
Yeah.
I mean, they are the first group on the chopping block when budgets get tight. It's about power and access to power, and they're not getting it, and they're caught in this loop of neglect that really comes down to issues at the end of the day as opposed to their own political bent.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are looking at that bent and trying to figure it out. Malia, what do you think? Is there a libertarian streak here that says, why vote? It's not what matters to me, at least not now. I'm young.
I don't think that at all. I want to echo what Ryan said, but I also want to talk a little bit about parties versus personality, which I think we've lost generationally as well. And I don't know if it was, you know, we all talk about Kennedy, right? And he kind of was this personality that we all loved and adored. And right after him is when voting turnout starts to decline. But so does party participation. And I know in my family, you know, in my grandfather's house, you're a Republican and you're going to be a Republican, you know, and it meant something to be a part of a party. So you felt you were part of a collective. You know, I don't think that I feel that both parties have become more moderate, but I also think that young people aren't finding a place in those parties, and a lot of people aren't. I mean, a majority of people are unenrolled, so you also don't get that kind of social effect as you do.
That association, that powerful
exactly.
affiliation. We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Andrew's calling. Hi, Andrew. You're on the air.
Thank you. 39 years old, calling from Acton, never missed a general election. Here's a suggestion for you. Mm-hmm. Why don't we put an item on the ballot to raise the voting age back up to 25? Or, for that matter, why don't we pass a law that says that we collect all the voter stats every year, and the generation that does not turn out 40% or better doesn't get on the ballot next year?
So here's a use-it-or-lose-it modest proposal.
But also include an option to say that, you know, if you aren't in a, quote-unquote, franchised generation, that you can show up to the voting place and say, I'm here to get my vote back.
But are you serious? Would you really like to cut 5 or 6 years of voters right out of the voting public?
More like I'd like to snap the younger generations out of the sense of apathy.
Mm-hmm.
Or to even see if they can't, that's probably worth knowing, too.
All right. Andrew, thanks for your call. Ryan, Malia, fighting words.
Well, I think one of the things we're missing in terms of how to snap them out in these big strategies is the slower process people go through to be educated in this country, which is school. They go through an education process, and these civic institutions, as they're supposed to be, really don't address voting. Voting is quite a mystery, and it's something people are almost embarrassed to say they don't know about, because there's sort of this sense out there you're supposed to vote, you're supposed to know about it. And the 2000 election pulled back the curtain on that and showed even older voters still having trouble with the process. So in terms of A, talking about its importance in school, and B, the pure mechanics of it, civics classes in this country, that's should be something people like, but they have been rolled back, and they're, you know, at times the more boring classes at school because, you know, they're just about presidents or wars. They're not really getting into the nuts and bolts of a person's role in the democracy and the citizen's role. And that slower strategy is really where I'd go as opposed to the big
changes. Emily Schley, I know this education issue comes up in your mind when you look at voting patterns.
Well, I just want to ask, first of all, whether the same generation that knows how to do a lot of stuff that older people don't, like burn a CD,
and
really get around the Internet, finds it so hard to figure out how to vote. And are you asking for spoon feeding? Clearly, you're smart enough; you don't need it. Why are you asking for spoon feeding? But I think part of this, what I was going to say before,
hold that thought, Emily, because our time's running down before the break, and you raise an interesting point here. Should technology be part of this answer? Would it be spoon-feeding, for example, to have more walk-in, register, and vote? Would it be spoon-feeding even somehow to take voting to the web, if that's where this generation is comfortable? Malia?
Well, I know updating our machines is a necessity, and federally we just got $4 billion allocated to help states do that, and I think that that's important.
You mean voting machines?
Yeah, voting machines.
But are you asking to be spoon-fed, is that?
No, I did want to address that as well as say that I don't believe in actually internet voting, but, you know, it's so funny when we talk about we need an education and, you know, someone might want to call that spoon feeding. I call it inclusion. And I don't think that we're not saying, hey, we want to be spoon fed, but we're saying we're just going to walk away from this process. We're going to do it quietly. We're not going to cause a fuss. But spoon feeding, I think is not what we're going for. The other thing that I do want to add to that spoon feeding, kind of metaphor is the fact that you can't do something that you don't know about. And whether you should know about it or not know about it, people don't know about it. So therefore, we have to educate people. Mm-hmm. And we can't just say, oh, well, you missed it. You should have known by the time you were 18, and you missed it. So now
what were you thinking?
Exactly. So now you lost your chance. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can get a mortgage easier than I can go out and vote, you know, and the mortgage company is spoon-feeding me that information, I guess, if you want to say that. But, I mean, I think we have to look at what our culture does, and with voting, we do the exact opposite.
Well, it's a big picture. We're looking tonight at America's missing young voters. Is there any good excuse for an American not to vote? Are we so focused on the senior vote that we ignore the politics that matter to most young voters? And what about you, young American? Are you 20, 25? Are you voting? Why? Why not? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
From BufferPets.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about America's missing young voters. We've got a big vote coming up in early November, and an awful lot of young Americans will not be participating. Record low turnout of voters under 30, under 25 is what's projected now. Question is, what is the missing youth vote telling us? And what message, perhaps, would bring American youth flocking to the polls? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. I'm joined in the studio tonight by Tom Patterson. He's Bradley Professor for Government and the Press at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. By Ryan Friedrichs. He's a graduate student at the Kennedy School and former executive director of the Youth Vote Coalition. And by Malia Lazoo. She's executive director of Mass Vote. You can join us as well at 1-800-423-TALK. Claire's calling from La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hi, Claire. You're on the air.
Hello. I was calling because I am particularly interested in what Malia has been saying. I identify a lot and see a lot of the general apathy amongst my friends. I'm a 24-year-old voter, and I'm wondering how can I get involved in my own area.
Let me ask you first, Claire, are you a voter now? Are you or have you ever been a voter?
I have, ever since I turned 18.
And you'd like to figure out a way to get engaged to bring more young voters in. Malia, how about it? What options are out there?
Well, right off the bat, Wisconsin Citizen Action is a great grassroots organization that's run out of Milwaukee, which does a lot of voter education and also works on public policy to actually address the barriers to voting. And that's an organization that you can go to. But, you know, I actually do a personal Get Out the Vote campaign with my friends and just kind of send an email around, make phone calls, you know.
It doesn't have to be fancy.
Exactly, exactly. And I'll tell you right now, you know, as issues are important, but so are relationships. And a lot of my friends, you know, don't care about voting. And then when the elections come around, they call me, you know, who should I vote for? What, you know, what am I supposed to do? And so just let them know. I mean, you don't want to become like, a born again pushing it on everybody, which you can do very easily. Let me tell you.
Have you lost friends, Malia?
Exactly.
Rocking the vote too hard.
Exactly. Exactly. I did have to cut back. But, you know, when you're first saved, you kind of just put it out there. But doing a personal Get Out the Vote, you know, and I've turned out 5 of my friends who would have never voted. And that's a start. So definitely the Wisconsin Citizen Action is a great organization to get involved with, as well as just doing your own little Get Out the Vote with your friends.
Claire, go get them, and thanks for your call. Jeff's calling. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air.
Hi. Speaking as a boomer, I wonder if maybe it's not so much a matter of knowing how to vote as knowing what levers to pull when you get there.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe the difference between the younger voters and the older voters is that those of us that have been around a while have become more polarized. We tend to go and vote against things that we've become crotchety about.
Mm-hmm.
And the younger voters haven't had that experience and don't trust the sources of information that are available to be able to map our own political views to the facts.
So, Jeff, do you think it's a problem that we don't have more youth voting, or is that just the natural order?
No, I think it's a problem, and I think that it could be addressed through the sources like the Internet. I moved a lot myself. And for a mobile voter, it's really hard to find unbiased information about what's going to be on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
And I've made a study of this, and I've been frustrated at every turn. But fortunately, I'm a crotchety old guy, so I know what to vote against.
Jeff, you're a good boomer voice, and we thank you for calling. Tom Patterson, what about this? What do we know about the political profile or attitudes of this tier of young voters, whether or not they're voting? What's the profile look like? Have there been surveys that can illuminate that for us?
Well, there have been a lot of surveys. You know, overwhelmingly, this is a group of people that doesn't have much interest in politics. And I don't think it's an information problem. I mean, there's lots of information out there. But unless you have the motivation to go after that information, to pay attention to news, to pay attention to the campaign, you know, you have to have that baseline of interest. And I think that's really where the problem resides. And when you don't have the interest, you don't have the motivation. And I don't think it's a question so much of the kinds of issues that are being addressed. I don't think it bothers young people that candidates talk a lot about seniors and fail to talk about college loans. I mean, if you look at McCain and Ventura, they weren't talking about college loans and a whole platform for 20-year-olds. They were talking about honest debate. I mean, they were trying to address the issues in a refreshing new way, to cut to the issues, not in the way that their polls told them to cut into the issues, but how they honestly felt about the issues. And they tried to appeal to idealism as opposed to simply kind of marketplace interest group appeals that are so dominant now in our campaigns. And, you know, I think it was that sense that this was something new. And the youth typically have really responded to kind of higher pitched campaign.
So not
addresses.
The crotchety what to vote against, but a more idealistic call to the polls.
It doesn't always work. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, there's a lot of context. You know, Bradley tried it, and he was much less effective at it than McCain was. And, you know, you've had lots of candidates since Ventura who wanted to be that independent, that flew through the middle and sort of captured the office away from the Democrats and the Republicans, and they end up with 1% of the vote. So, I mean, I think it takes a particular combination of circumstances, but what really pulled young people into those two campaigns was the sense that there's something different about this politician. It's not politics as usual. It's not a laundry list of promises to special interests. It's a different vision of what the political arena could be.
Ryan Friedrichs, how do you interpret that? Is there an ossification of political language that turns young people off? Or why Jesse Ventura and John McCain?
I think young voters have a very high sort of BS sensor. They're going to write you off quick. If they don't upfront believe you, then I think they're going to check out fast. And I think the two words I'd use that draw a line between somebody like Nader, who I'd put in there as well, Ventura, McCain, honesty and humor. They actually used humor. The political ads that Bill Hylston actually ran for Ventura used humor and used more of a fun sense as opposed to motivating by negativity and fear and other common tactics. They used humor and they used frankness and candor, the straight talk express that McCain was using. And I think those two elements do resonate with young people, like Tom said. But I really think at the end of the day, you can break through with those, but you got to talk about issues. And I think issues are what move all voters. Every campaign will tell you that to the polls at the end of the day.
And Tom Patterson, just a little bit more background. If young voters suddenly flock to the polls, what would the significance be for Republicans and Democrats? Is there a latent preference for one party or the other, or is this the independent generation? Do we know?
Well, historically, when you have less interested, less informed voters flocking to the polls, it's usually something you don't want. I mean, it's a response to the momentary passions. But I don't think it's going to happen. I think the real challenge here is to bring young people into the polls in a systematic way to sort of early on get them interested in voting, make it a lifetime habit. If you get people to the polls once, you stand a good chance of getting them back. If you don't catch them in one of the first three or four elections, you're likely to lose them through their adulthood.
Let's get one more call in. Chuck's calling from Sauk County, Wisconsin. Hi, Chuck. You're on the air.
Wonderful show. Say, hooray for Jeff and boo for Josh. You know, you have to get your local paper and, you know, spend the $1.50 or 75 cents or whatever it is, get involved, find out what's going on, and find out where to vote, who to vote for. It's just
dive in and figure it out, in other words.
You bet. You're supposed to read the newspaper a day anyway, and if it's a 75-cent newspaper, it takes you about 15 minutes to read it, find out what the local issues are, find out where to vote, who to vote for, and just get involved. Gee, I'm sorry that people seem to need an invitation to go and vote. It's something that me, born in 1950 and fought in a war,
You're not waiting for the limo to pick you up and take you to the polling place.
Exactly.
Chuck, thanks for your call. Our time's running out. But Malia Lazoo, you hear this. I'm afraid the elder voices coming in tonight are not real sympathetic. It's like, hey, you just need a good kick in the pants kind of attitude coming through here.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's easy to feel that way when you are being included in a process. And I think that that's something that we really want to look at, is the fact that it's not that we're saying, you know, you need to call me and I mean, I'm 25. I started this organization. No one came to me and said, hey, Malia, do you want to get involved in the process? You'll feel good. You know, it was something that I decided to do really as a vendetta to get back at the city, which is why I started it, because they wouldn't let me have a hip-hop concert in Boston Common.
Ah, so young people can be crushing.
Right?
Our time is running down. Well, we've got to go out on the hip-hop concert note. Malia Lazoo, thank you so much for being with
us
tonight.
It's been
great having
you.
And Ryan Friedrichs, thank you for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Tom Patterson, Bradley Professor of Government at Harvard's Kennedy School and author of The Vanishing Voter, Public Involvement in an Age of Uncertainty. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Tom, it's been a pleasure.
Amity Schles, I want to get you in here. You've heard from voters and non-voters all ages around the country. Final thoughts.
Just remember, this is not just an American phenomenon. This is a Western phenomenon. Britain, 2001 general election, had the lowest turnout since World War II. So whenever you look at it, you want to say, oh, it's also happening in Europe. It's happening in Canada. When they have a health vote, only 1% turnout. It's a function of prosperity and wealth, good or bad.
Do you see a history giving you a kick in the pants that might turn this around, Amity?
Well, yes, I personally think the instruction of history is part of the problem. The supplanting of history, American history, by social studies, which is amorphous. Young people don't know what they think because they haven't learned American history.
I guess I sound crotchety,
but I think that would help.
I guess I'm thinking about the history that may come. You know, there are more events coming down the pike that could, I suppose, shock a whole generation into voting, as the Depression and World War II did in the past. Amity Slades, it's great having you tonight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Question, could the low turnout rate among 18 to 24-year-old voters be helped by extending the vote to 17-year-olds? That is exactly what the City Council of Cambridge, Massachusetts did this past spring when it voted 8-1 to allow 17-year-old residents to vote in municipal elections. The state legislature still needs to approve the measure, but if it does, Cambridge will become the first city in the country to enfranchise high schoolers. In this radio diary, Jesse Baer, who organized the group of teenagers who successfully lobbied the Cambridge City Council, explains why giving the vote to 17-year-olds is a good idea.
There have actually recently been some studies that have shown that voting is habit-forming. That's been common wisdom for a long time, that if you vote once, you're more likely to vote again. The only numbers we have are from the state Lower Saxony in Germany, which lowered its voting age to 16 in 1996, and they found that 16 and 17-year-olds actually voted 15% more than 18 to 24-year-olds, at least in two cities in the election after they did that. The evidence we have is that even if 16 and 17-year-olds didn't vote more than anyone else, what would be important is that they would vote more than 18 to 24-year-olds are voting now, and we think that they would. I don't think teenagers are apathetic in general. I think that teenagers, though, haven't paid a lot of attention to electoral politics because there's really no one talking to them. And I think that there's an issue that made a lot of sense to a lot of kids. Why shouldn't we be able to vote? I mean, we take part in our city in a lot of ways. And so I think kids got really excited about having a chance to really change something here. We actually originally went for 16. 17 was some sort of a compromise. Personally, I think that 16 is what we're going for in the long run. 16 would allow everybody in high school to vote at least once. Because of the way our local elections are set up, they happen at once every other year. So if voting age was 17, not everybody would get an opportunity to vote, and we're hoping to extend that opportunity to everybody eventually. When you turn 18, a lot of the time you move to another city. And in those cities that you move to, there are new local issues that might not mean anything to you. For example, it might not make any difference to you whether they move the library next door to you, or like where the new water treatment facility is going to be, or how they're going to make bike lanes and so forth. When you're 16 or 17, you've spent your whole life in a city. And so the local issues mean something to you. And I think that that's a great way to start someone on a lifelong habit of voting. Not only do you have your parents to encourage you to go out and vote on election night, but you have teachers, and we've actually talked here in Cambridge with the people who develop our social studies curriculum and the principal of our high school, and they're all really excited about putting together a curriculum that would actually tie in voting. So we would be very excited about all the different ways when you're in your hometown that you can be supported in taking that first step to a lifelong habit of voting.
Jesse Baer is one of the founders of the Campaign for a Democratic Future in Cambridge, Massachusetts. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Eileen Amata, Kelly Jones, John Roberts, James Ross, Keith Shields, Tim Skog, and Karen Schiffman, with help from Darren Manoogian, Sabi Mir, and Oliver Reed. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is WBUR. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Gregorian.